The ability to listen well comes with huge benefits, both on the job and in personal relationships. But even back in 1987, before the age of digital devices, people could only remember 10% of what was said to them in face-to-face conversation after a quick interruption.
Today, companies and coaches are zeroing in on the power of listening and why it matters. There are seminars, there are books about the skill, and how to be a better listener.
Sue Schellenberger joins us now. She recently wrote about how to improve your listening skills for the Work and Family column, which she writes at the Wall Street Journal. Sue, welcome back to Central Time.
It's great to be with you, Veronica. Thank you.
Sue, what do we know about how well people listen in their day-to-day lives?
It's been oddly neglected. I was surprised when I reported this story that for all the training that goes on presentations and speaking well and putting forth a good verbal skill set, very little is said about listening. People aren't taught to listen. They don't assign much importance to it, and they tend to think that it's a lot more important to talk. As a result, I think that we're talking past each other a lot in the workplace.
And what kind of things prevent people from paying as close attention as they should when other people are talking?
One of the things is you're always worried about what you should be saying next. You're listening only with the intention to reply, as Stephen Covey said, and you're trying to think of the best comeback or thinking about the next topic you want to bring up. Another problem is what Julian Treasure, who's a really popular TED speaker, calls filters. Conversational filters, that is, you have an assumption going into a conversation that you know that what somebody's going to say, whether it's going to be accurate or worth listening to, and whether they're, you know, someone with a contribution to make. These filters keep us from listening. And in other cases, we're just distracted. Of course, you know, distractions are multiplying apace, and we're often thinking about who's buzzing us on our cell phone or texting us.
So that statistic I read at the beginning about how people only absorb a little bit of what they hear after an interruption, do you expect that that's probably much worse now that we have cell phones and, you know, all kinds of things like that to distract us?
I suspect it is. There's not much really good empirical research in this field. I found having to cite a 1987 study as the latest study on conversations, but a researcher at Rockhurst University in Kansas City took a look at how much time people spend listening. And with college students, about 24% of the time is spent listening. That's down from 53% in 1980, the last comparable study. I think we can assume the trend is similar for the population as a whole. We're really not getting much practice anymore, and we assume that when we listen, if we learn something, we can Google it and find it again if we forget it. So we really don't pay that much attention. And, of course, if you're in a face-to-face conversation, you can't Google it. It's lost. So it's kind of a poignant topic, actually.
Yeah. So what are we losing by not being better listeners?
I think number one in my mind is the quality of relationships you may have in the workplace, the ability to really learn from each other. People who are good listeners who I interviewed for this story said that they were often surprised by what a colleague had to offer if they really sat down to listen. Problem solving comes with good listening. One of the best writers on this topic is Bernard Ferrari, who wrote Power Listening, and he insists that if you're a good listener, you'll get much more quickly to the right solution because you'll be hearing what everybody has to offer. You won't be just resting in your own complacency or your own assumption. So quite a bit lost here.
You interviewed someone for the piece or quoted them saying that it was a authority figure saying that they assumed because they were this person of authority that they were supposed to do the most talking. Is that true in most companies, do you think, that people with power think they should talk the most?
Well, I think managers think that's part of their job is to always have the answers. And that's why people are constantly interrupting each other in meetings. It's why they're racing to finish each other's sentences. I think it's a very common assumption. And the manager you mentioned actually went through many years of coaching to get over that. And he told me he cited several examples where he thought he had been able to hang on to really good employees by listening deeply and helping them solve the problem they were having rather than just glossing over it and giving out, you know, some kind of boilerplate advice.
And if we're not the boss, is there a sense that, hey, we have to impress our boss and our colleagues by talking and being authoritative, and that's more important than listening?
That's absolutely true. That's a really good observation. You're always trying to make an impression. One anecdote that didn't make the story was about a young attorney who was doing all briefs quite well, did good research, he spoke well, but in meetings, he never seemed to be listening. There was no sign, no active, you know, feedback, no eye contact. And the partners in the firm asked the coach to work with him. They said, look, you know, this guy just isn't even tuning in. He's not listening during meetings. I see no sign that he's taking anything in. And working with this young attorney, an associate in the firm, the coach found out that he really hadn't had the social skills in his upbringing. He had come from, you know, a deprived, disadvantaged family. And as she worked with him and said, you know, you're going to have to learn to do this. It's not just talking. You have to listen. He did begin to polish those skills, and he became eventually, he's on his way to the partner track now. Mm. So you really can tell if somebody's listening to you or not. I think that may be the big surprise here for many people. You think people don't notice, but they do.
Oh, that's interesting. So if we want to be on the track ourselves to being better listeners, what is a good way to start?
One of the most humbling things to me was that a good listener will truly be ready to receive. And that means you have to empty out all those filters. One woman recommended doing a kind of a brain dump. You know, she said, before I have an important conversation, I write down everything I'm thinking of, all the things that might distract me, and exactly what I should do on each when I come back to work, and then her brain is clear. Sometimes it helps to make a list of topics you want to cover or questions so you're not always worrying, oh, what am I going to say next? One challenge that a sales coach advised was, plan that you only want to listen for 1/4 of the time. Really good discipline to follow
to talk
to keep
yourself
from chattering. Yeah.
I'm sorry, you said listen only 25%. Did you mean only talk 25% of the time?
I beg your pardon, talking 20% of the time. 25%.
Good listening,
yeah,
Rob.
Exactly. Wow. I'm practicing.
Yeah.
I'm practicing. Yeah,
thank you. That's exactly right. I Freudian slip there. So just, you know, try to draw the other person out, and that will turn your focus to the other person where it belongs.
Now, this kind of brings up an interesting point Rob and I were talking about, you know, as talk show hosts, this seems like an occupational hazard that we have to think of the next thing to say while someone else is talking, because in a regular conversation, if there's a, you know, a pause, that's okay. You know, no harm, no foul. But if you're on the radio, you don't want these gaping pauses between every conversation. Is it possible to do both?
I think folks in your profession have a remarkable ability to almost double track on conversations. And you know, among, you know, the best interviewers, including yourselves, I've seen you're really able to listen really well, pick up nuances, funny things, but also have another question in mind. So I guess that's a special skill that not everyone has.
Well, fortunately, most of us aren't on the radio all the time. Do we need to be more accepting of that kind of pause to think and consider and formulate the next thing that we're going to say to make room for us to listen?
This may make you squirm as it did me when I was doing the reporting. I was, you know, the coaches were pretty uniformly advising, you know, use the power of the pause. Mm-hmm. I said, what? The power of the pause is that if you're just willing to sit there and, you know, and look attentive and wait, the other person will typically reveal more. And that manager we spoke of a moment ago who was helping employees solve problems, he said he found that they would dig deeper, you know, for the way they were really feeling about things or what they were really dealing with or what's the real obstacle here. He said the power of the pause, even, you know, 10, 15, 20, 30 seconds to let that person just think about it, you'll get to more depth, he said, and it really worked well for him.
So employ the power of the pause. What else can we do if we're someone, you mentioned active listening before with the young lawyer who had to show signs that he was listening. Are there signals that we give toward listening?
Right. I asked about this, and I think one of the challenges in listening is that our minds race far faster than anyone can talk. I didn't realize this, but on average, we think at least twice or three times more quickly than anyone can talk. So our mind is naturally, you know, gyrating around, jumping from here to there. So taking notes can help. Some people, you know, doodle. I mean, I talked to a person who interviewed a lot of job candidates. He said he secretly doodles because it helps him focus on what's being said. Another thing that can help is to keep eye contact. This will help you stay engaged. Paraphrasing what the person just said is a popular method. You know, we've all heard this from marriage therapy to encounter groups, say back what you think was said and make sure you got it right. This is fine if it's not overused. I mean, sometimes it can be a roadblock and deter the conversation. But my favorite is sort of the clarifying question. And not, you know, well, what do you mean by that? You know, not with an attitude, but rather, tell me what was really most important about that, or you know, where would you like to go with this? To really get the person to focus what he or she is saying, the questions really do help you stay engaged.
We're talking right now about how to be a better listener with Sue Schellenberger. She's the creator and writer of the Wall Street Journal's Work and Family column.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're talking about how to be a better listener with Sue Schellenberger. She is the creator and writer of the Wall Street Journal's Work and Family column.
And we want to hear from you. Are we a nation of bad listeners? Are you a good listener? Are you a bad listener? Call in at 800-642-1234 and let us know if you have tips on settling down and paying attention to what the other person is saying. Again, 800-642-1234 or email talk@wpr.org.
And we go now to Reed in Madison. Hi, Reed.
Hello, good afternoon, everyone. I'm a professional storyteller. And in response to the thought you just asked about sort of how do I reward myself for listening, if I'm telling a story or if I'm coaching someone to tell a story, I want them to listen. And if I've listened really, really well, I might give myself a chocolate chip cookie or something later on. What I wanted to share with in the conversation is when over the years as I've trained other storytellers and been asked what's the most important thing or what's the first thing a good storyteller has to do or be, I tell them they have to listen and they have to be a good listener. And in doing so, as the teller tells the story, the teller listens to an internal voice that the teller then is then relating to the audience. So the teller models good listening to the other people in the audience for the story. I wanted to also mention and ask the guest to respond to this thought. In my own individual life, when I've interacted with people through language and practiced active listening and asked other people to active listen with me, what seems to me to happen is as I listen to Sue talk, let's say, and I wait, I open my mind to her thoughts. And rather than composing a rebuttal or a refutation or some other response while she's talking, if I just let my mind stay open, I internalize her thoughts, and then those thoughts become more integrated with whatever my experience is when I do offer a response. And if we're problem solving or something like that, my thesis is the net result is more apt to be a very much more integrated blend of our two experiences, so we have more resources with which to solve problems.
Great. A couple of fantastic points there, Reed. Thank you for that.
Really.
And, rewarding himself with a chocolate chip cookie, of course, is a good idea, too. But Sue, do you want to start with the last part of that about if you're truly listening, you can take things in and integrate them with your own thoughts. Do you feel like that happens?
Beautifully said, Reed. I think that's so true. What I found was that when employees actually were taught to listen to each other, I interviewed several who came back from these training programs and said that they were having better conversations with colleagues. They were coming up with better solutions. There was less conflict, fewer disputes. And I think that's a testament to the point that Reed makes. You know, we truly open ourselves up to change and to understanding, and that changes us, and it also produces a better outcome. It's one of the reasons that, you know, the famous business scholar Peter Drucker recommended that the boss mostly spend his time listening because he's going to make better decisions as a result. You learn and you change. And it's a terrific observation.
Reed, thanks for your call at 800-642-1234. We go now to Richard in Minneapolis. Richard, hi.
Hi. How are you doing today?
Good. What do you think about this listening conversation?
I think listening, if you listen to people, then you're not thinking. You know, most people are thinking what's going to be their response when they're listening to someone, so they don't really hear everything they say. And you meet a lot of people who think they know everything already, so they don't need to listen. But if you quiet your mind down and just listen, then you truly hear what a person says.
So don't assume we know what's coming out of the other person's mouth. Listen to it, Sue, is what he's saying?
That's a really great observation, Richard. That's really true. And I think that's some of the best training in listening is exactly that. It's almost like a meditation, isn't it? You clear yourself out to hear, to take in without prejudice or judgment, and you're open to new knowledge and new learning, as Reed said. I think it's I like the way you said that.
And there are people, you quote, that liken deep listening to a kind of meditation, a kind of mindfulness. Is there something to that?
There is. There's a Google engineer has written a book called Search Inside Yourself that's taking off like a wildfire in certain Western companies where employees are being trained in this program of mindful listening and other skills. And the mindful listening is very much like the active listening we've all heard about in marriage therapy. They just sit and listen for 3 minutes without reacting or saying anything, and then repeat back to each other what they thought they said. One guy came out of such a course and said that his marriage got better. His wife said, "Wow, you're really listening to me differently now." Instead of just saying, "Yes, honey, I heard what you said," you know, really listening deeply. So I think there's a lot of power here for improving relationships.
Well, Sue, that reminds me, I was thinking probably most of us don't think of ourselves as bad listeners when some of us clearly are. How do we diagnose this in ourselves?
Oh, boy, I tell you, after I did this story, I became so self-conscious. And I, you know, I realized how much, you know, I thought I was a pretty good listener and I interview a million people a week, but I, you know, I wasn't. I was jumping ahead. I think, you know, the extent to which you're able to tolerate a pause, for me, that's one thing in a conversation. You know, the extent to which you are, like Richard said, you know, in a quiet state where you really are listening and not thinking. And, you know, the quality of your conversations will go up, you know, if you're listening well. So if you notice you're not really getting much out of the conversations you're having, maybe you should take a look at yourself and your listening.
Going back to our caller, Reed, from a couple moments ago, does it work to model good listening if you're with one of those people who you feel is not a good listener? If you just model it yourself, does that get you anywhere?
It's a great idea. I think it does if you're the boss. I've been inside companies where the CEO was a very good listener, and it just trickled right down through the ranks. So I do think it's tough if you're... You have to go for the long-term goals if you're a good listener among poor listeners. And I think you can see it as your secret weapon. You can listen really well to people who don't listen well, and you can learn more and more. You'll gather more information in your conversations. You'll be smarter. You'll solve problems better. And eventually, you know, the virtues of good listening will become clear to others. But it's very tough if you're, you know, if you're in a company and you're not the boss and you're listening well and others are not. You know, you get crowded out of conversations and meetings.
Yeah, how do you confront someone politely in that situation at work or at home?
It's really hard. You know, they may just start talking at you again, right? I think at home, I think it's, you know, using the pause and, you know, staying very calm, trying not to be reactive. I mean, step number one in all the training that I looked at for this story is just try not to be reactive. Just be. Just open up. Be receptive. Take it in. Listen. That in itself has a kind of transforming effect, especially on a close relationship. And as you do that, the other person will realize, oh, something's going on here that I'm not participating in. And beyond that, it sometimes can really help to get some therapy or some training.
Well, Sue, we're going to leave it there. It's so much to chew on, and it's a great topic for a radio host as well.
Yeah, so,
thank you so much.
You both are great listeners. Thanks to you. I enjoyed it.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Sue Schellenberger. She is a creator and writer of the Wall Street Journal's Work and Family column. She recently wrote a column about how to become a better listener.
And you can still share your thoughts. So you can tweet us at Central Time WPR. That'll be your weekend assignment. Tweet us your thoughts on listening, and if you've taken what you just heard from Sue and have tried to put it into practice in your daily life. I don't know. I think I can take something from that. You?
Absolutely. Yeah,
what?
There's a lot.
No, I'm just messing with you.
All right, we're going to have to work on that, Rob. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. More to come here on Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.